Good day, everyone. Today's guest is Etienne Rousseau, who began life as a male model and now runs one of the two or three most important production company when it comes to major league fashion shows and events in Paris, Milan, and internationally. So let's begin at the beginning. How did you become an important show producer, Etienne?
Good morning, Godfrey. How are you?
Good, thank you.
It's an organic story, actually. It started in the 80s, as you say. I started modeling, actually, early 80s, and this gave me the opportunity to travel and to live in Tokyo and Hong Kong. So when I came back, I was doing two things, still modeling, but I also was art directing a club in Brussels. The club was like the Palace, an old cinema from the 30s. And there was a booming of fashion in Belgium at the time. And the six from Antwerp, as we know them, were kind of born or nearly born, and we got kind of close. I was with them going to London, going to Florence, working, doing a shoot with Walter van Beerendonk and stuff like that, and then also started to work with Dries Van Noten as a model first, and then I was a bit selling the collection. I was also, it was a small company, so I was cooking. That was one part. And then at the club, we were very close to fashion as well. We were doing young designer festival, young designer contest, working with photographers to do exhibition and stuff like that. So it was very close. So when in the late 80s, early 90s, actually, when Dries wanted to do his first show in Paris, he asked me if I wanted to do it. Ah. And I said that. And that's how it started. It started exactly in 1991.
I actually I went to Dries' second show in Paris. I'm afraid I didn't make the first one. Tell me, from the beginning, what was your idea of how shows should be produced?
Well, with Dries, the way it started, it was definitely always a ping pong game. It started even before we did the first show, because like when we were doing those little selling campaigns, whether it was in Milan or Paris or London, after we would go to dinner and we would talk and say, oh, if we would do a show, we could do this or we could do that. And so Dries was giving a brief. He was going to that direction with the collection. And then we started interacting and kind of playing this kind of game where it didn't matter where the ID come from, as long as it was a good ID.
One of the interesting things about Dries, and which is still true, there's always a little bit of hospitality attached to his events.
Very, very much. I think Dries always wanted people to feel at home, sort of, and then that hospitality for him is very important. And one time, it's Belgian fries. I insist on Belgian fries. One time is a beer in the summer or a glue wine or something like this. But he wants people to feel at ease, and he loves to receive. Well, yes.
I remember at that particular show, the one I went to at Dries, it was in an Indian restaurant, Passage, not that far from here. And he gave everyone, it was pre-Euro, he gave everyone a card for 30 francs or something. And I remember, so you could eat, you could buy lunch for that.
Exactly.
But I actually went and got my hair cut at the time.
You did?
Yes.
It was amazing. There are several stories about that. It's called Passage Brady. It still exists. And we had to convince, there was a hairdresser, there was restaurant, African, Indians, there was everything in there. So we had to convince all of those little store shops to be part of it. And the way to convince them, I say, okay, we print fake money, we give the guests fake money, they can go and spend on the gallery, which actually, I didn't know you had the haircut, which is a lot of fun. But it's funny because I still remember the video, and there was like the waiters of the Indian restaurant started dancing, and it was unexpected. But it was nice because at the time we just had wishes, an idea, and we didn't think. It was very instinctive. We wanted to have fun. We wanted to share emotion with the people. Nowadays, that's changing a little bit.
Well, initially you did that, and then, of course, you graduated to much bigger brands.
Now yes, slowly. At the beginning, actually, I was doing so. At the beginning, and it's interesting for me because I did a bit, I covered a bit, I wouldn't say 360, but almost, because I was doing the show. Then we were taking down the show. We were building the showroom. Yeah. And then I was getting...
using the materials that you used in the show.
Yes, exactly, and changing the show venue into the show. Showroom, there was the budget that there was, so we had the same venue. And then I was getting a customer in the morning and a customer in the afternoon, and in between I would go down to the kitchen to cook for the guests. So we were doing, it was a small team, and we were doing everything, but I learned a lot by doing that. And at the beginning I was just working for Dries, so I was covering. So sometimes he would send me to Tokyo, say, I have nobody to do the showroom, could you please go? Or just Charivari in New York, we have to do his little event, please, it can go. And then slowly, yes, I started to get Belgium designers, like the generation after, like Olivier Tesquen, Angelo Figus, Yves Van der Voorst, and so on. And I started with them. With them, actually, Hermès asked me to do a street casting for them that I never have done, but took my camera, and went to London, went to Amsterdam, went to Brussels and to Paris, and we started doing that. And eventually we did that, and then the lighting, and now since 20 years we produce the show. Then Chanel came along, and then Lanvin and the others.
Once again, with each designer, you're having an interaction all the time, feeling things out before you work out where they want to go.
Well, yes, there is definitely always. I mean, there is. We have nowadays three types of customers. Well. So, one type is basically where we have almost, I would say, almost carte blanche. Another type, which is the biggest part of them, is where it's a ping pong game, and we have also a small part where we are executive producer, and I have to name them. It's Miu Miu and Chanel, where we do not work in creation, we produce, and for Chanel, I do the scenography of the models.
Okay.
Yes, but the ID come from the house. They have Stefan Lubrina in house that does an amazing work. Carl was there. Now it's Virginie. So
one thing that when you bring a nephew or a cousin or a date to your first fashion show, people are often very surprised how elaborate the fashion show can be, how much effort goes in, not so much for money, but ingenuity and preparation and scenography. And one of the defining elements of Lanvin, when Albert Elbaz was making these fantastic shows, was the lighting. That it was a particularly set of. Can we talk about that?
Yes, we can. I mean, yes, at Villa Eugénie, we are, and myself, I'm in love with lighting. I always said that, and that's not me saying, but I always consider that the most beautiful woman with a bad lighting can look ugly, and the most ugly woman in the world with a good lighting can look extremely interesting. So it's all about about lighting. And yes, with Albert, actually, he pushed us to the max beyond sometimes what was, I would say, the proper lighting should be in a show, but because we wanted to have a lot of emotion, and we ended up creating a signature lighting that you could recognize a show from Lanvin, even not knowing it was Lanvin. You could, by the light, recognize it. And I'm happy that you...
How did you do that? What was the actual technique?
Well, I mean, it was different technique that we approached. Sometimes it was kind of very extreme, extremely precise technology, and sometimes it was sort of like low key. It was depending, but we always tried with Ignace, which is the light director that I work with since over 20 years, to give an identity. And we still try to do that, try to give an identity to brands with their lighting.
We live in an era of data, and brands designing things according to the information they receive. How does that impact on you? I mean, are you interacting with people in that way? Is that helping you make decisions aesthetically?
It impacts everybody that in our industry. I think you cannot, as I was saying at the beginning, it was your instinct. You say, let's do this.
Yeah.
And you were thinking how to do it. Yeah. You did not think or not as much as the consequences. Mm. Nowadays, you have to think 360 of what consequences it could bring or not. So there is freedom, but it's not the same freedom as it was. And of course, I wouldn't say that we sort of do care nonstop about that. Otherwise, you're driven by data, which is impossible. And I think Carl said that he always wanted to be politically incorrect, which I believe is still the way to go. Otherwise, there is no longer creation in the business. And but it has its importance. And I think it's like marketing uses a lot of data. Press uses a lot of data, I suppose. And yes, so we are surrounded by data. But I think we also need to push the boundaries.
Does your work sort of, it's a runway show and then a showroom, but does your work continue on into the internet?
Yes, for some customer it does.
How does that happen?
Well, actually, we see in what we do, we have to make sure that we give a lot of content. So a show nowadays, before a show, you had like the photographers and a video.
Yeah.
That was about it. And the video was editing, and you would see the video maybe 1 week, 10 days before. And it was the... Also, the people that were invited were press, and it was newspapers before the internet revolution. It was so you had newspapers, you had weekly, you had monthly,
magazines,
and sometimes you would see just the picture 3 months later in a magazine. Nowadays, because of the influencers, because of internet, you see things on real time. So a brand has to make sure that also they deliver the best job in real time. So when you come to a show, sometimes you have 50 people working backstage that you don't see, that are working on the content, and they make sure that they have the content they need for the rest of the season, or at least for some good times for the rest of the season. So we really doing content that has to be used in several times. When you take it from the reels they do at the beginning before the show to what they do during the show and what they do after the show, yes.
I mean, I know in the old days when I worked for Women's Wear Daily, you had to get your own photos. You know, we had always a photographer. Or you waited until the next day. Now, at Fashion Network, if I don't get a link within 2 or 3 hours, I get people to call up the PR. What's happening? Why are you late? You know, it's a much more demanding schedule, you know, and that people expect that nowadays. It's a different world.
They do, and it's wonderful, because what has changed... and with all due respect, was the press. There was a kind of a diktat from the press for many years, which were selecting what they would want to show or not, and with priorities. Well, nowadays, it's on real time. So finally, what it does, it goes to directly to the final consumer, which at the end of the day is the one that makes this whole industry work, from the press, from the magazine, from... is the one that finally pays for all of that. So,
what's the biggest budget you've ever worked with?
Do we really have to talk about money?
Well, a little bit, sure.
It's annoying because then we associate that with name. Sometimes we can do a very interesting show with not so much money, and sometimes, and you know, I prefer to take it like this. It's not how the amount of money you have, is how you spend it. And there's a magazine about that every weekend in the New York Times, I believe. No, but see, the thing is that sometimes, and you cannot tell that before. Sometimes, for example, you can spend $1 million and it's not, you feel that the result doesn't show that. And sometimes you can spend 200 or 50,000. I'm not going to give numbers. It's just like this. And the result of that feels sometimes better than say, I still don't understand how is this possible. It comes with maybe a supplement of emotion. I'm questioning myself a lot about that.
I think once again, if you take someone to a big show, they're always amazed at a brand like Chanel or Vuitton or a Dior or something, how a brand can spend $5 or $10 million on a 15-minute event, you know, that is immediately separated and taken apart. Do the economics always make sense?
Well, again, I heard Carl one time said, because he was asked the question, and he says, so he was asked if he was he throwing the money by the windows? And he said, well, you know, if I throw the windows, it goes back to the main entrance. What people need to understand is the bigger the brand is, I'd say the bigger the communication has to be, because it's actually worldwide brands. They're everywhere in the world. So it takes more budget to reach all of your market that it takes with a smaller brand.
What's the most complicated assignment you've been given by a designer?
The next one.
Oh, no. Well, give me some examples of the past.
Well, there's also, like, we are doing Moncler Genius in London in February. And in general, we had, it's a project that we work 6 months in advance. Here we had 2.5 months. In general, we have 10 days of loading. Here we have 3 days, 3 nights. So this, and actually I have a meeting, and a huge meeting this afternoon with my team to understand, it's not even what we do, is how is it going to be possible to build it in 3 days and make it work in 3 days. So if I take of what's now, that's the most, the biggest example I have.
Okay. Where sometimes, you know, designers can be real artists. Not all of them, but certain of them are. And sometimes their brief and their direction can be very ambiguous.
Yes. I could take Marta Margiela at the time, for example. When we were going to our first meeting of the season with him, we were coming out and we say, "Oof, we had to." No, but because there is a, what I always say is there is a normality that's different by the designer, and you have to sort of like fine tune what the words normal says for him. Well, to take that, like, and with Martin, we had to have 2 or 3 meetings that we could come back. And it, actually, if you see, it was simplicity to the max. But to reach that kind of thinking, you would need 2 or 3 meetings to fully understand where he was.
What he had in mind.
Yeah, exactly.
I had the good fortune to go to one of Dries' show, that legendary show in, I think it was a giant Procter Pratt & Whitney factory in North Paris.
Yeah, that doesn't exist. Absolutely.
It does not. Huge, enormous, kind of looked like a Soviet era factory, but even it was American capitalism. And there was a long dining table of about 100 meters long, And at the end of it, where we ate very well, we had a nice three-course meal. At the end of it, they took away the plates and the models performed on the table. It was a legendary show. Did you, and you know, people were ecstatic after, how do you know if a show has been a success or not? Or if your production has worked or not?
Okay. Actually, we had a lot of challenge on this show, so we can spend a few, as it's one of a kind, one for the book, we can talk about. Actually, the idea of that show first was thought in the time before the show, that we say, oh, you know, we could do a show on a tablecloth, on napkin, Italian way, a spaghetti, and then the guys would walk on the table. Never happened. And then for the 50th show, so we're talking 50 show later, it happened for women. So we looked for a factory because we wanted to have a table. Actually, the table was 150 meters.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And it was 500 grass that were served exactly at the same time. And we had like 150 chandeliers above the table that flat up, and the challenge was also for the press because at the time people say, that far, I'm not going. And it was not the best neighborhood in the world, but that's where we found this factory that would allow us to do what we wanted to do. So some people didn't come, just a few didn't come because it was like 500 people seated, just a few. And I know that those few people who didn't come, a couple, still regret nowadays because we knew that it was a success, first of all, for the applause, but the emotion that there was in the room. And it was by the people that were talking about it the day after that we knew that we had done the right thing. For me, personally, we know and we've learned that perfection is impossible. And after each show, I always look back and see what I could change to make it better. On that show, in retrospect, 20 years later, I wouldn't change anything.
I have to say, at the time, there was a period when I used to go to collections driving an old convertible. And I remember going with the buddy driving up. It's, you know, pre-Google Maps, trying to find this place and just about making it in down a lane in the middle of the dark. And there were like, there was this thing, and we were the last people to sit down. And it's one of my 10 favorite shows ever.
And this was called, it's called La Allo Chevaux. I know exactly what you were talking about.
You know what I mean? And I've been to 10,000 shows, and it's still one of my top 10.
You know, one thing Dries is happy with, like with places like this, or for Passage Brady, that he made Parisian discover places in Paris they didn't know.
Very important. Show productions are very big events, and they use a lot of material and a lot of structure, and they put them together and rip them apart. So it inevitably brings up the question, how sustainable is a show? Historically, it wasn't at all sustainable. It was a bit of a guilty party. How has that changed, and what are you doing to address that?
Okay, so true. It wasn't at the beginning. Yes, it would be say no. We always thought no. It wasn't. We were just doing and ripping things apart. But you know, then we started working at l'École des Beaux-Arts de Paris, and we were wondering with some of the stuff what could we do with them, and we started giving to school. So that was the very first step, and that's pre what is around since 3 years. So because we just wanted to, you know, we were using canvas, we were using so we were given. Then we realized that there was like a place called La Réserve des Arts that would be a place where you could give, and they would give to theaters, they would like give to all of that stuff. So that was the beginning of the thing. Then it became much more serious, and we're talking about RSE, Responsabilité Sociale, and we personally, I, the company, that came and do a Polaroid of our practice. Mm. So they interviewed all the people that had the doing in the show, whether it's lighting, whether it's decor, whatever. So they did that, and it took them quite a few months to just to do it. And they came to us and said, okay, this is your practice. This is what you could change and should change. So we hired them to follow us, to help us. And then the decision was not longer to say, what do you do after? It was in the making, in the choosing of the material, and understanding how we could put this in the round economy one more time.
Within the idea of the show.
Yes, yes, that we do. So,
give me some examples, but more recently.
Like, for example, now Dries doesn't want to see one gram of carpet. So, Dries, there's nothing to throw away. There was two rolls.
Yes.
There was two rolls of thick papers. Recycled paper for the models to change. Normally, you put a cheap price carpet under their feet for them to change. There was no longer since three shows. It doesn't want that anymore. Now, we also find that a company, when you use carpet, they reuse it to insulate houses.
Ah.
So that's interesting. We actually, when cottons, for example, you know about your in Cairo, right? You were there. I saw you.
Yeah.
For the men. So there, the cotton that we use was Egyptian cotton, first of all. It was given to association that would make clothes for people in needs for all of it. The wood that was used was cut at minima, that it could be recycled in the economy and used for something else. So it's, and actually every brand now, every company has a department, and in our company we have a department, and it's a very serious, and it's not only about that. Social responsibility goes further. Yes, as I say, but it's also education, it's also women, for one reason and another. I didn't try to be better than another, but in my company, in 95% of the workforce is women. So we didn't wait until we say there should be a 50-50 or a thing like this. We speak 10 languages in the company because I love mixity. And I have people from, I think it's extremely interesting to have point of view that are very, very different. So, but this maybe comes from my Sicilian background, where we had a 16th civilization, and I have a bit of everything in me, most probably.
A lot of us old heteros in the industry, you were a man who liked to hang out a little bit and dance and enjoy life, but now you've become a bit of an elder statesman, and you are a regular lecturer, I believe, at EFM, the Institut Français de la Mode, which has become the kind of preeminent fashion college here in Paris.
Yes.
Tell me about the courses you give there.
It's a workshop that we do every year since 4 years, and I'm extremely happy. At the beginning, I was asked by Stéphane Warnier, and I say, Stéphane, I wouldn't know what to tell them. I wouldn't know what to say. And he came. And then one day I say, okay, I'll do it. And then for me, it was like a revelation when I did it. I say, I felt I should have done that way before, because I felt, and maybe you just said it, it's like I'm getting a little elder. And what's important is the transmission. What do we do with all the know-how, with the experience that we collected through those 30 years of work everywhere? What do you do with it? You don't want to bring it with you. You have to transmit. And it's extremely interesting. I do. So what I do with them, I say, I have like about 14 to 16 students that come from all over the world. And we give them a brand name, a designer that we have. They can choose whatever show it was, and I want them to produce an invitation to choose a venue to do a totally different show, communication, to do a party, and how do they, what are they going to do with all the, basically, everything from Instagram to all the social media, how are they going to...
360.
Exactly. I want them to have to look at 360 on a brand.
But including parties, of course.
Yes, there's always have to be a party or a dinner or...
To come back, you know, to
as
beginning.
I said, I come back from my disco years.
How do you see the business evolving in the future? I mean, we've gone through this incredible internet revolution. Everything's been digitalized, and the old media has been fairly significantly decimated. As you said previously, there used to be a diktat of magazines and newspapers. How do you see the future?
I think there will always be, first of all, let's talk about press. There will always do some press, like paper press. I think it's extremely important. We have to separate thinkers also. People with a huge background in journalism or into fashion history than influencers. You know, for me, that these are two different leagues.
Yes,
well.
Exactly. Yeah.
So what happened? Nowadays, everybody has a say. You, whoever you are, you can start, whether if it's a YouTube channel or Instagram, and if you find the right thing to say, you will have a community.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that it's going to progress like that. I think there will always be a press, and I hope there will always be a press, because it's interesting reading depth. It's interesting learning, and I still love magazine, and I still collect. I still love paper, although we are in a digital era. That's not going to stop. That's going to go even furthermore. Maybe we're going to have Apple is coming with this 3D glasses thing. I'm curious, because soon we're going to have a magazine that you're going to see in 3D. So it's going to evolve. The production is going to be done in 3D, most probably the film. And all of that is going to move extremely fast. Still, there will be paper, I think. And I hope there will be, because it's a very different thing to look at a real good book or a real good magazine and to see an image digital. I think digital is fantastic, but it's fast consuming.
During the pandemic, there was a whole theory, or even before the pandemic, first of all, was the whole theory of see now, buy now. That was the future. People would make clothes and sell them instantaneously. That seems to have drifted off. There are practically no see now, buy now photos.
Yeah, I still have.
There are elements of shows where they will sell you bits of them, but basically it didn't really happen. And also in the pandemic, there was a whole theory that the future had become video, that this was not a sustainable business model, that people all got in jets and flew across the world to come to a city twice a year to see the collections. Do you think that's true? Will there be fashion seasons in the future? Because it seems to have bounced back season to normal.
So, now. I mean, this is a...
Those are two different...
This is a bigger question, and I want to take a moment to respond.
Okay.
If you look at Airbus, they're working on a plane that is zero emission.
Yeah.
Okay? It's going to take a bit of time. But
One day.
But I think sooner than we expect.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. So that's for the traveling. So I think that now the world is refreshing. First of all, there is a conscience, which is global conscience, which was not.
Yeah.
Okay? So now everybody thinks most probably the same thing, is that we have to save our environment. It's not the planet, because the planet, with or without that, is still have another 450 million before it's 500 million years before it's extinguished, before it goes into ashes. So what we need to protect is ourselves and the human being and the spices and the race. And so I think that there is this. So, of course, there was no. So this is, let's say, so we are animals. Sorry to say it like this. And we are animals that like to connect. And no matter how good the video are, they will never give the emotion that you have into something that is life.
Yes.
And people need to, how are you going to do? I believe in the metaverse. Yeah. I believe in digital. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But all of this are going to be elements that are going to work together.
Yeah.
I see what it's going to be. So, so it means that the people are never going to meet anymore? Because if you say there's no fashion show, you can also say there's no theater show. You can also say there's no more concert. I think we have to think a bit more and say, yes, we're changing practice. It's not going to be done in 5 years because it's 150 years that we're destroying with the since the before the 1900s with when it's when we started with the
industrialization.
Yeah, yeah. That's it's not today, so it's going to take some years, and I hope that in 10 years, by 2030, 2035, the change will be major. We'll look back and say, wow, what we accomplished is stunning, which is nothing to be proud about. It's just we should have wake up maybe in 20 years before. But still, this is who we are, and criticizing only is not a good thing.
Okay. Finally, we have a lot of young listeners who, first of all, they want to discover the interesting actors of the industry, but also there are people who'd like to have a career in fashion and luxury in this world. What are three bits of advice you would give to someone listening to this about if they wanted a career like that?
Have a dream. Wake up with a purpose of your dream. If it's your dream, you can realize it, no matter how it is, no matter how long it takes. Work hard, very hard. It's not by working 9 to 5 that you will manage to put a dream, that your dream will come true. And I think that the last one I would say is work with your heart and your instincts. It's, for me, very important to be very true to oneself. I don't think you can go wrong if you're true to yourself, no matter what you do in life.
Etienne Rousseau, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Likewise, cher ami.